This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by You Build It. There's a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. It's time to find out what's trending.
What's trending? You can't make this up.
Unfortunately, you can't make this up. A video that I posted on KTTH.com shows you just how bad things have become in the city of Seattle. I found an audio or a video clip that someone had posted of a public comment period on March 11th over at the Seattle City Council. And in this video, it epitomizes the elitist class of politicians. Even though this takes place in Seattle, this is not a Seattle issue. Because there have been too many cases of politicians all across the state, all across the country, that refuse to listen to you. They don't care about what you have to say, what your position is on an issue that you've asked these people to work on your behalf. We are the collective boss of every single elected official in office. We are their boss. Anyone who collects a paycheck subsidized by our taxes, they report to us. And when we show up to have a reasoned conversation, to make a point during, say, a public comment period, they owe it to us to at least make eye contact once, maybe put down their cell phones, put away their laptops or Microsoft Surfaces, put them away and actually give us the 120 seconds that we get to utilize in order to talk directly to you as a council. In Seattle, they decided that they don't care about what you have to say. And certainly we've seen that in their positions on the head tax. We've seen that on their positions on, you know, demonizing Seattle police officers. We've seen that. But never have we seen it in this way, where you have a man who decided to show up for an earnest conversation about an issue that he feels passionately about, to be almost completely ignored. And it was caught on tape. If you want to see the video, text the keyword rants to 1-800-465-8770. But I thought we would play in its entirety just 120 seconds of the nonsense that was on display at the Seattle City Council meeting.
Next is Richard Schwartz. Good afternoon.
Afternoon. Before you start the clock, could you stop it for a second? It's real discouraging to come up here and see all the heads down. It's like, you
sir,
know,
you're on a 2-minute timer here, so let's go.
I'm not following you.
You're on a 2-minute timer.
Could you start it over, please?
No, we're not going to. Just go ahead.
So it was unreasonable for you to ask that people look up and give me their attention?
Sir, you have 2 minutes. We're all looking at you. You have 2 minutes. Now you have a minute and 30
seconds.
They're
not looking at him.
Okay, well, I guess I won't be able to say it. Last week, you limited, this kind of goes to the heart of what I was going to talk about, which was the state of our democracy. Last week, you limited speakers because of the number of speakers to 1 minute each, but you allowed Camilla Jayapal to speak as long as she wanted to. It was 4 or 5 minutes. And it reminded me of George Orwell's famous saying from Animal Farm about how all animals are equal, but some animals are more equal than others.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I feel like I'm being treated now, just because I was kind of asking for your attention. Like, I noticed you all were very attentive to Ms. Jayapal last week. And I just wanted to ask for your attention before I started. And I immediately got a hostile response back from you. I don't understand that. So you don't ever respond to citizens? Or what's...
I do, sir, but you have 2 minutes for public comment to the agenda items.
Well, it's all on tape, and I think it's a pretty sad commentary that you think that asking for you guys to look up off of your computers and give attention during this short period of time was an unreasonable thing. I really feel bad about that.
Thank you.
He shouldn't feel bad, and you shouldn't feel bad. In fact, none of you who just heard that clip, none of you should even feel angry. You should feel empowered. Because now you know very clearly, in video and audio form, what this council is all about. And it's not about you. We deserve so much better than what we're getting in Seattle. We deserve so much better than policies that are influencing cities all across the state, from Olympia to Edmonds to Bellevue to Bellingham. We deserve so much better than what it is we're getting. Despite begging for them to put down their phones and just look at him while he's speaking, Lorena Gonzalez, Shama Sawant, Mike O'Brien, Rob Johnson, they didn't care. They didn't look up. They didn't put down their phones. They've got other stuff that's more important than you. This should empower you to do just a little bit more to make sure none of them have political careers when their terms are over. 7 council seats are up for grabs. 7 of the 9. If we can get a majority of people who aren't conservative necessarily, you're not going to get a whole bunch of conservatives on the Seattle City Council. But if we can get some reasonable people to hold the majority, think about how different this entire state would be. Because the sad reality is, Seattle policy ends up, in a lot of ways, dictating policy all across the state. We see it happening in Kirkland and Edmonds. We've seen it happen in Olympia, in Bellingham. It's a sad reality. Think about for a moment if we had just some reasonable people who, when you show up to a meeting, take time out of your day, take time that you would otherwise spend maybe with family, maybe with a loved one, maybe at work. You're taking time out of your day to show up to a meeting to have just 120 seconds of FaceTime with your council members, and they completely ignore you, instead playing on their phones, going on Twitter, checking their email. Imagine what this entire region would look like. And so I hope listening to that doesn't just piss you off. It actually empowers you to boot these incumbents out of office. Vote in council members who don't just want to pretend they care about hearing from the public, but actually care about listening to you. And so what does that mean for those of you, the vast majority of you, who don't live in Seattle? It's really easy. You can donate some of your time to candidates who are running to unseat some of these incumbents. You can donate some of your money to these people. You can call up your friends and family members who live in Seattle to help evangelize certain candidates. You got to do some research. I understand you think because you live in Marysville or Yelm that this is not going to impact you. Sorry, it does. This is a collective effort we all have to take in backing the right candidates. Now, there are a lot of candidates who are quality who are running. Lots of them. Ari Hoffman is one. He's running a campaign that's going to be tough because he's running against a socialist who's not going to call herself a socialist. But that's what she is. You've got Naveed Jamali, who is a liberal guy, but you know what? On the issues that I personally care about, on a local level, I'm with him. That's who I'm voting for. He's running against a person who used to be with the SPD, no longer, is loathed by the SPD. Jim Pugel, loathed by him. I'm with Naveed. There are people like Sergio Garcia and Brendan Colding who are running. Cops who are running because they're sick and tired of what this city is becoming. You've got people like Ann Davison Sattler running. Because she doesn't like what this city is becoming. You've got Pat Murakami running because she doesn't like what she's been seeing. You can do so much good, even if you don't live in Seattle, because this stuff impacts you. Now, you can start in a very simple way. Text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. I'll send you a link to that video. Watch it. Be in disgust for 2 minutes and 5 seconds. And then post it online. This is a story that's gone viral. There are tens and tens of thousands of people all across the country who have been in this blog today. And it didn't get picked up by Drudge. Usually when that happens, Drudge picks up one of my pieces. Not this time. People are pissed, but I would say don't be pissed off. Feel empowered Text RANTZ to 1-800-465-8770. And then you'll get to see this perfect display of how little the council cares about you. Text RANTZ to 1-800-465-8770 now. Keep those text messages coming. RANTZ to 1-800-465-8770. That's a none better tax resolution hotline. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Media bias.
This I thought was really funny. CNN, their talking heads and journalists, they were shocked. Shocked, I tell you. They were shocked to find out that their own poll showed about a third of Latinos actually support President Donald Trump. Despite their efforts to constantly tell Latinos that Trump is a hateful bigot who's out to get them, despite their attempts to pander to Latinos using progressive talking points, CNN's own studies, own poll, said 34% of Latinos support President Trump. And they were not comfortable with this news. Here's New Day anchor John Berman.
New polling suggests that a majority of Latino voters disapprove of the job he's doing, but the margin of error is shockingly wide. CNN's Miguel Marquez spoke to Latinos on the southern border who say they support the president.
By the way, I just love, they never, ever, ever talk about the margin of error. Ever. Ever point that out. They'll include that in the visual on the screen that'll say plus or minus 5 points or whatever it is. They never vocalize it. And then just the tone of his voice is like, they actually support President Trump.
I can't believe what I'm hearing.
That can't be right. This is a CNN poll.
The U.S.-Mexico border in South Texas, dividing countries and Latino voters.
You were born and raised in McAllen, Texas, yes?
Mm-hmm.
And you live a mile from where we're standing, the wall.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And you want to see this not only taller, but longer.
Longer and taller, yes.
How much taller?
Twice as much at least.
And you want the whole border, 2,600 miles?
2,600 miles. Yes, sir.
Wow. They weren't expecting to find that because they don't actually talk to Latinos. They don't talk to black people. They don't talk to gay people. They pick and choose who they're going to talk to based on where they think ideologically they're going to be. And then when they use that bias in who they select to chat with, they get shocked. Shocked that someone who's Latino might support a border wall. This is how out of touch a lot of media members are. They don't understand why some people want a border. They don't understand what it's like living in communities that are negatively impacted by illegal immigration. And then finally, when they get out there and they actually start talking to people, they're like, oh my gosh, these other people exist. Oh my gosh, I cannot believe what you just said. Usually on air, they claim those voices don't exist, and the few that they do, they end up mocking. They end up calling out in basic terms as an Uncle Tom, as a sellout. You're not truly black if you support President Trump. You're a joke. You're not truly gay if you support President Trump. Oh, I mean, you say you're Latino, but are you really? How can you say you're Latino and then decide you're going to support President Trump? They hate it. But kudos, I suppose, to CNN for at least not editing the heck out of these conversations with pro-wall Latinos.
I don't think the wall is going to be a barrier, really, for the good people. It'll be a barrier for the bad people.
The president still has some Latino support, about a third, which is on par with other past Republican presidents.
You're working on your citizenship.
I am working on my citizenship. I am
so you can't
legal
vote for Trump.
Not yet.
Mayra Gutierrez came to the U.S. from Mexico when she was three. She is working toward getting her citizenship and hopes to vote for the president come 2020. Her top three issues: abortion, the economy, and immigration.
We do have a lot of problems here with immigration, and I do support his stance for the wall.
Whoa. By the way, did you notice there that they listed some of the issues that are important to voters? You know what wasn't on that list? Climate change.
Don't we know someone running on only that issue?
Jay Inslee? You mean Jay Inslee?
Yeah, that's the guy.
Yeah.
I forgot his name there for a second.
Let's talk about another aspect to this poll. CNN poll looked at all the presidential candidates who have so far decided to run, plus Joe Biden, who hasn't said he's going to run, but he's running. They found that despite the fact that Jay Inslee has been doing TV nonstop, he's been on MSNBC and CNN, he's been on The Daily Show, he's going all over the place to get in front of cameras. 73% of respondents to this poll have never even heard of Jay Inslee. Womp womp. This was a poll that looked at the favorability and familiarity of the declared candidates. The sample size for a poll like this was actually pretty significant, 1,003 respondents. 73% stated that they had never heard of Governor Inslee. And then when you look at the favorability of those who know him, 7% viewed him favorably. Of the people who actually know Jay Inslee, 7%. 7% viewed him. That's kind of hard to be as disliked.
And what about
that?
Non-immediate family members and friends? What is he pulling with
they
them?
They only pulled people who actually know him and his family.
Jeez.
This was also his cabinet year.
That's rough.
They pulled. They called up Frank Chop in Olympia, said, what's your family?
Can you picture Jay Inslee trying to help his granddaughter with math, and she asks a question, then he goes off on a tangent on climate change and how we need to get greener energy.
But you know what's worse about this? So of the 7%, then they break it down via Democrat or Republican or independent. So of the 7% of the total people who had a favorable position, doesn't mean they're voting for him. They like him. 4% of Democrats showed some favorability for Inslee. 4% of the people he's actively trying to go after. Comparatively, 41% of respondents had heard of Bernie Sanders, obviously. And 5% of respondents didn't recognize him. So just 5% didn't know who Bernie was. But 71% didn't know who Inslee is.
You know, Bernie will make a nice vice president today.
I have a question, and I have a legitimate question for the people out there. And you can text us at 1-800-465-8770. I have a legitimate question. Because we know that Jay Inslee is not going to be president. We know that for a fact. Do you start to feel bad for him at some point? And what point might that be where you legitimately feel bad? Because the one bad thing about this is he is a reflection of Washington State, right? His embarrassment is our embarrassment. We may not have voted for Jay Inslee, but he represents the state of Washington. So every time he screws something up, it looks bad for us. But at some point, this, you know, he becomes the sad guy who's begging for a vote that no one wants to give him. Kind of like that needy person who will do something nice for you just so you can say thank you and he gets some sort of, like, recognition that he exists.
Or the guy who asked you how you're doing, but really he just wants to ask.
Yeah, because he's just a lonely person. The one who's in a loveless marriage, whose kids hate him, and has to go out and just get attention elsewhere. Like, he's that equivalent of a politician. Does anyone feel bad? And if you do, what's your like bar? Because I'm starting to get into the feel bad category. Because it is in a lot of ways like the puppy that wants to play and no one wants to play with the puppy. And you're just like, at some point, as much as you love dogs, you just hate this puppy because it's just nagging you to death. You give it a ball, and for some reason, he keeps putting the ball under the couch where he can't reach it. So you got to get down on all fours, grab the ball from underneath the couch, and then throw it again. And then, of course, the stupid dog ends up putting the stupid ball under the stupid couch again. And you do it over and over and over again, because if you don't, it just cries and whines the entire time. I'm not talking about my childhood dog. Do you kind of feel, I'm right? I'm getting to that point. I'm very close. I'm not there yet, because it's still a lot of fun mocking him, but man,
interest in this dog story you just told. What's
Jasmine would do that all the time. A pug, she loved playing catch, and I throw the ball. It was just a tennis ball. She'd grab it, she'd come up and try to give it back to me, but then before I'm allowed to take it out of her mouth, she would purposefully put it underneath the chair. Then she would cry because she couldn't reach it with her little paws and her little legs, and then I'd have to get down, grab it. And I would say, Jasmine, stop that. Here, let's play. And then you throw the ball, gets the ball. It comes up to me right before it's about to give it to me. It puts the ball back underneath the couch for some reason. And then I would get angry.
Sounds like she was playing you.
I think she was. I mean, in a lot of ways, it's like it forced me to do extra. It's like burpees.
Fun fact, Jasmine is pulling better than Jay Inslee. So, I mean, there's that.
Jasmine, if she were still alive today, she would pull better. She has a better shot at running for, and we should just start a a Twitter hashtag campaign, Jasmine for president.
I'm pretty sure at this point, if you put any dog up for president, it'd probably win.
1-800-465-8770 if you want to send us a note on the None Better Tax Resolution, Holly. Lots of text messages on that topic. When we come back, Ben Shapiro is going to stop by. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. KTTH host and Daily Wire editor-in-chief Ben Shapiro is on a mission to defend Western civilization against those who wish to ignore our moral and religious founding, pushing instead notions of social justice and, in a lot of cases, godlessness. His newest book is out now. It's called The Right Side of History: How Reason and Moral Purpose Made the West Great. It's already the number one best-selling nonfiction book on Amazon, and we're going to do our best to actually help keep it there for a very long time. Joining me on the line right now is Ben Shapiro. Ben, hello.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So this is a book that seems to have come out of a speech you gave a couple years ago at UC Berkeley, the speech that had a lot of police presence there. What is the basic argument that you're making?
The basic argument is that the reason that we're so angry at each other is because we don't actually hold that much in common anymore. And that's because we haven't studied our history, because the truth is that we're living in the freest, most prosperous country in the history of the world, in the best time in the history of the world, and yet we're tearing each other apart because we seem to think that most of the things that we disagree about are really important. And the truth is that most of the stuff that we disagree about is secondary to what we agree about. We presumably are all supposed to agree about things like free speech, and we are all supposed to agree that each individual human being has value and worth, and that we all ought to be in control of our own labor, for example. These are all things that we used to agree upon, and we used to agree upon them because we understood that we were the product of 3,000 years of civilizational development. And yet now we kind of look around us, we look at the prosperity, we say, this is all built on racism and homophobia and hierarchical relationships. What if we just did away with all this and did something revolutionary? What if we rebuilt the world from scratch? That is a pretty rotten history, and it's important that we look back at our actual history to understand why Western civilization is great and what made it great in the first place.
Well, in the history that you spend your time on, at least using as the examples you hinge the argument on, Jerusalem and Athens.
Right, and the basic argument is that Western civilization is driven by two forces that are interplay with each other throughout the history of the West. One is Jerusalem, the idea of Judeo-Christian value systems, the notion that every human being is made in the image of God, the belief that the universe is an orderly place that we have the ability to actually investigate and the obligation to know. The belief that morality comes from a source outside yourself. You don't get to construct your own morality out of pragmatism or practicality. All of that comes from the Judeo-Christian worldview, and then that has to be balanced, on the other hand, with Greek reason, this idea of natural law, the idea that you can discover using your reason why exactly you are here, what exactly the world was made for. And those merge in the philosophy of Aquinas and Maimonides, and they come apart again during the days of the early church and during the days of the Reformation. But that interplay is what creates the West. We have to understand that when you read the Declaration of Independence and Thomas Jefferson is talking about nature and nature's God, what he's specifically talking about is Judeo-Christian values on the one hand and Greek teleology on the other. The reason you have to understand this stuff is because right now we are at war with both of those things. We are at war with both Judeo-Christian values, which we have deemed to be intolerant and oppressive, and then we are at war with reason, because it turns out that without God and without the notion that human beings have free will, then why does reason matter? Why not just revert to tribalism? Why not revert to trying to control other people top down?
Well, the argument, I suppose, would be coming from progressives who will get triggered by the whole idea that we should be focused on Judeo-Christian values is, well, what did Judeo-Christian values say about slavery, about keeping women from voting? And certainly we look upon that history of this country, we're obviously not celebrating it.
Yep. That's right. And the thing is that this is why the book isn't just about Judeo-Christian values. It's about balancing that with that, again, Greek notion mm-hmm. of reason. And what's important to note, and this criticism, which is the most often leveled, as you point out, this criticism is really not a particularly knowledgeable criticism. The fact is that virtually every bad thing that has happened in the United States was not unique to the United States. When people talk about slavery existed in legitimately every civilization in the history of the world, pretty much. And it was unique to the West that we abolished it. Slavery wasn't abolished in Saudi Arabia officially until 1961. It was the West that was fighting to abolish slavery. And as early as the 8th century, Christians were already talking about ending slavery, at least amongst themselves, which is something different. The right to vote for women. This is a creation of the West. This doesn't exist in other places in the world. This is something that the West decided was a fulfillment through reason. We decided that the fulfillment of the injunction that every human being is made in God's image requires that vision to be extended to women, and that women are capable of exercising reason also, and they have the same rights. The constant expansion of that balance between reason and revelation is where things lie. The problem is when you say we don't need the basic principles at all in the first place, we can make up our own principles, we can start from scratch. Or two, when you say we only need the principles, that's how you end up with theocracy.
Just joining me, Ben Shapiro's on the line. His new book is called The Right Side of History, How Reason and Moral Purpose Made the West Great. If you want to help keep him at number one in the nonfiction bestsellers at Amazon, purchase the book right now. Text the keyword Ben to 1-800-465-8770, and I'll send you a link so you can purchase it directly from Amazon. Text the keyword Ben to 1-800-465-8770. In your view, are there any dangers of embracing this kind of moral purpose? Do morals have to be shared?
Well, morals definitely have to be shared at a very basic level. Otherwise, you can't have a society. If you actually believe that the other person is deeply immoral, or that their morality doesn't match yours, then you have a problem. This is why Robert Putnam, who's a sociologist over at Harvard, he is on the left, and he believed in the slogan that diversity was our strength until he actually did the research. And what he realized is that as the diversity of his census tract went up, this is a quote from him, the only two things that went up were protest marches and television watching, unless there was a common moral purpose. If there was a common moral purpose, then diversity became a great thing. Then diversity was wonderful. If you go to church and you look at the pews, and it's a bunch of people of different backgrounds with different experiences and different ideas, but they all have the same common goal, which is to worship God and live a moral life, then you can have a thriving, bustling society with open discussion, because everybody understands that everybody else's intentions are good. The same thing holds true in the military. One of the big problems I think that we have in the country right now is we don't actually define key terms in the same way. So even the stuff that we think used to unite us, you know, words like freedom and liberty, these words don't actually unite us anymore, because by freedom, it turns out that a lot of folks believe that freedom means that you are able to confiscate wealth from somebody else. And for others, liberty means that you have to use government imposition in order to create the material necessities that provide the grid work, the groundwork for freedom. You know, that sort of stuff, these failures of basic definitions are glossing over divisions. They are not actually solving the divisions. So if you want to solve the divisions, then we have to get back to these fundamental principles. This is why, almost as though, you know, Darwin talks about the tree of life, this idea that all creatures came from this one root. Well, if we are trying to figure out what we have in common, then we're going to have to move backwards. We can't move forwards to what we have in common. We have to move backwards and see, okay, what was it that brought us to this civilization in the first place?
So then to that point, how do you differentiate between, you know, us deciding in this country to abolish slavery due to the fact that we've pushed back on the reasoning side of things and how that just didn't make sense and didn't really match our Judeo-Christian values versus language just evolving? Because I suppose you've got folks on the left who want to say, well, gender is no longer what we used to think about it. We're now using this new reasoning to define it as more fluid.
Right. I think that's a fundamental abolition of again, those basic Judeo-Christian principles. And this is where the ability to look into those principles that we have to take as a given matter. So, again, there's a Judeo-Christian principle that the universe is orderly and is non-arbitrary. And that means that if you look biologically, that the universe is orderly and non-arbitrary and non-subjective, that you can actually look at facts and you can look at evidence and you can determine from the facts and the evidence the state of things. Well, gender, being a completely made-up term, is arbitrary. It's not the use. It's I suppose reason unmoored from fundamental principle, and that's one of the points of the book, is that reason unmoored from fundamental principle allows you to reach some pretty terrible places, just as religion unmoored from reason allows you to reach some pretty terrible places. You got to balance the two.
Text the keyword Ben to the number 1-800-465-8770. We'll send you a link to Ben Shapiro's brand new book. It's his eighth book, The Right Side of History, How Reason and Moral Purpose Made the West Great. Text the keyword Ben to 1-800-465-8770. Let's support a member of the KTTH team, and let's make sure that we keep a reasoned book on politics, on government, on history at the top spot on Amazon. With all of this in mind, last couple of questions. Right now, you're battling some more nonsense in Washington State. Whitworth University has now banned you. This comes on the heels of Gonzaga banning you. What's your response to this happening, and how would it maybe tie into what you basically warn about in the Right Side of History?
Yeah, it ties into this feeling that we've substituted subjectivity for open discussion. So what happened is that the fundamental basis of happiness, well, what we were established to do was to create a pursuit of happiness. What the founders meant by happiness was this idea of acting in accordance with right reason. It's an idea that is attributable to the ancient Greeks, or acting in accordance with God's will, which is an idea attributable to Judeo-Christian values. We've discarded that notion of happiness, and we've substituted in its place this idea of subjective happiness. I'm happy when I'm happy. I'm happy when I feel good. The argument on campus is basically that feelings ought to trump reality, that your identity is your feelings. And thus, if your feelings are hurt in any way, I have somehow attacked your identity, and thus I must be banned. Well, that is a fundamental rejection of the notion that we can have a discussion, or that an objective reality exists outside of your feelings. And that is tied again to this rejection of the presence of values themselves, the presence of Judeo-Christian values, eternal truths, evidence. It's the abandonment of reason in favor of emotion. You can't build anything on that basis, let alone a university. I mean, it's frankly astonishing that of all the places I should be banned, universities are some of the first. That's pretty...
It is nuts, because it's indicative of exactly what's going on in these college campuses, laid out in a historical way, again in the book called The Right Side of History, How Reason and Moral Purpose Made the West Great. Buy the book on Amazon now. Text the keyword BEN to 1-800-465-8770. We'll send you a link directly back so you can purchase it very easily on Amazon and help keep Ben Shapiro number one at Amazon.com. Ben Shapiro, my friend, thank you so much for coming on. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. Good to talk to you.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rancher. Don't forget, right after this show, in fact, in about 10 minutes, you're going to get to hear The Ben Shapiro Show, weeknights, 6 to 9. Welcome back to The Jason Rancher. Thank you so much for tuning in on this Wednesday afternoon. It's weird because it's nice out, and it's been nice out all week. And at 3 o'clock, right when the show starts, it feels like I want to just go home and the end of my day because it's nice. I want to go out and enjoy the weather. But then the second that I step into the studio and I start to read about all the stories we're going to discuss, and I think about the problems that are facing this region, I get energized. One thing I was not energized about when Saul Spady this morning on his show just decided, without even consulting me, that he would create a NAACP bracket that I'm supposed to be involved in.
What did you just say?
NAACP. What is it?
You think that the NAACP?
Oh, no. NCAA. Sorry, I always do that. NCAA. When he did that, I was like, oh, now I got to do this. I don't know anything about sports. I don't know. I mean, not this sport, at least college basketball. I know nothing. And so I got a little annoyed, but then I realized, you know what? And Saul knows this. These brackets doesn't mean anything. You can be an expert and you can lose. You can be someone who knows nothing and you could win, because it's all a crapshoot. You're just guessing at some point. There's no way to do this well. I love the strategies, right? There's no strategy.
Yeah. And you know, I think it's a good idea in theory of putting a bracket or a league with the KTTH audience. But let's be real. Conservatives, like the ones listening now, they don't care about sports. They're not good at sports. They should just stay out of the bracket and let me win. I mean, they don't know anything about sports. They don't know. You're telling conservatives.
No, okay, we know what we pay attention to. We know what you're doing.
You kidding me?
Folks, don't listen to him. He's trying to not get you to join our free league. Text the keyword NCAA to 1-800-465-8770. Text the keyword. You want to bet?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, what do you want to bet?
Text the keyword NCAA to the number 1-800-465-8770. You can join the official KTTH bracket. It's being done via ESPN's app. And you can join. You can tell us who you think is going to win. A lot of people are in this group already. And these are mostly Saul Spady show listeners, so I feel like we should get more people involved. So if someone does win, it is that's not you or me. It's at least someone to represent this show.
Well, that's hypothetical because I'm going to win because none of our listeners are going to join because they don't know the difference between a ball and
you see when you anything. Do when you do that when you do that people might not actually join. And I do want people to join from my group. Otherwise it's just all Saul Spady listeners and that's not fair.
Well, they probably, you know, our listeners.
I mean, our listeners are way better than his listeners. I know the the ones who listen to both and they listen to KTTH all day. They're the best.
Well, they're the best, right? But they're not going
to. But I mean, if it's just someone who only listens to this show versus only listens to Saul, I mean, obviously our people are better. So text the keyword NCAA to the number 1-800-465-8770. You can join our group. All you have to do is hit the join button. There are several dozen people, including, of course, myself, producer Tom, producer Darren, and of course, Saul Spady. I've got, who do you have as your number one? Who do you think is going to win it all?
That's secret. I'm not giving away.
It's not secret. It's all public.
It's the answer. I'm not going to give away the, you don't give away the answer before the test.
But it's not, it's not.
It's just not public yet.
When does it go public? Tomorrow?
Tomorrow.
Oh, okay. So I shouldn't say who's number one on mine?
Well, you can. I mean, it's probably going to be wrong, but. You know.
Gonzaga.
Really?
I did that because they're local.
Yeah.
I put Washington up. I can't remember when I kicked them out. You have until what is it? Till tomorrow, right? To do this?
Tomorrow, 9 a.m., I think.
Okay, so just go ahead and do this now. Text the keyword NCAA to the number 1-800-465-8770. The good news is Saul has said whoever wins, he will take you out to lunch at Dick's Drive-In because, I mean, that's kind of cheap because his family owns Dick's Drive-In and, I mean,
you know,
he gets free burgers.
To it.
But if you win, he'll take you to lunch and there's nothing better than an awkward lunch with a talk show host. I've never had to participate in those types of stunts, but I have done events where there's a VIP group that you have to mingle with. And they're all really super nice people, and I appreciate how much money they end up spending to do this. But I never know what to do, and so I feel like I overperform. It's
just weird.
Don't talk
about politics or what they talk about, you know, weekly. That's probably a dead end.
Yeah. Text the keyword NCAA to the number 1-800-465-8770. Join us on our quest to make sure a Jason Ranch Show listener or staff member actually wins the bracket. And if you want to differentiate yourself because you can come up with your own screen names, put your own screen name, but then at the end hit dash JRS, Jason Ranch Show, just so we can easily identify you. And if there's a way for me to cheat behind the scenes, I'll help cheat. So make sure producer Tom doesn't win. Text NCAA to 1-800-465-8770.